started talking about chapter 51 in Tehillim, which is David HaMelech's expression of tshuva. We're going to go back to a pause in a chapter, one that Sarah spoke about, and there's something I want to say about that pause. And then we're going to go into the next chapter, and there are going to be great ideas that are going to emerge from the two of them. Just hang in with me and trust me. In chapter 12, we had finished the story of David and Bathsheba. In chapter 12, pasuk 13, after Natan HaNavi comes and he tells David HaMelech the story of a rich man and a poor man, a rich man who had many sheep, a poor man who had only one shepsala. A guest comes to the rich man, so he doesn't want to take any one of his sheep, but he rather takes a sheep away from this poor man. And this poor man was so close, there was such a close relationship with his shepsala. His shepsala would lie down with him, his sheep would share everything in the house with him, they would eat from the same plate. It was a very special relationship between a man and his sheep. This man's best friend was his shepsala. And here goes the rich man, takes the poor man's sheep, slaughters that in order to give to provide a meal for the guest that has come to his home. David HaMelech, when he hears this story, he gets very, very upset and he says, this man deserves to be punished. And of course, then come the great words of Natan, when Natan tells him, Ata Ha'ish, you are the man. In Pasuk 13, in that chapter, it says, Vayomer David al Natan, David said to Natan, Chatati l'Hashem. I have sinned before God. I have sinned before God. And we were not certain, except for some remarks that were made by Sarah last week, I believe, the pause. In that pasuk, there is a pause. And then it says, Vayomer Natan el David. Natan said to David, Gam Hashem he'evir chatatcha lo tamud. God has forgiven your sin, you will not die. The meaning of the pause. So Sarah told us that she had heard, was it from Esther Kitov, another member of the staff of the Jerusalem College for Adults, that Esther said it was in that pause that David HaMelech said chapter 51 in Tehillim that we began to learn last week. So now I'm a bit upset with myself because I've been going through parts of Al HaTshuva of the Rav, and the Rav speaks about the pause, and I forgot that the Rav speaks about the pause. So I want to tell you what he says. What does Rav Soloveitchik have to say about the pause? He says the following. The Rav asks another question, and it is from this other question that we are going to arrive at an understanding. And we're not talking about the words anymore. What we want to explain now is air, space, a pause in the Navi. We're not going to be explaining any words. But the Rav's problem is another one. The Rav's problem is a simple one. At the very beginning of the laws of Tshuva, the Rambam says, When a person decides that he's going to do tshuva, then what he must do is confess. Ketzad mitvadin, how does one confess? So the Rambam gives us the formula that must be said by a person when he does tshuva. Ketzad mitvadin, in the first perek of the laws of tshuva, first halacha, the Rambam says, Ketzad mitvadin, how does a person confess? Omer, he's supposed to say, Ona Hashem, please God, Chotasi, or Visi, Poshati, I have sinned unintentionally, I sinned intentionally, I acted rebelliously, Lefanecho, before you, Vasiti, Kach, Vekach, and I did such and such. Vahare Nihamti, and behold, I regret it, Vavoshti, B'masai, and I'm embarrassed of what I've done, Ula Olam, Eini, Chose, Ledov, Arze, and I'm never going to do it again. Vezeh, The Rambam says, Zehu ikaro shel vidui, this contains all of the components of confession. What are the components of confession? First of all, hakaras hacheit, that a person recognizes, he realizes, he knows that he has sinned. A tshuva cannot begin until a person realizes that he's done something wrong. Then there has to be regret and embarrassment for the past. So, element number one is hakaras hacheit, recognizing that he sinned. Element number two is that he regrets the past. Element number three is that he accepts upon himself for the future, never ever again will he do that. Those are the three fundamental elements that make up vidui, which of course means that is the essence of tshuva. So the Rav asks, what did David HaMelech say over here? David HaMelech said, what was it, two words? Chatosi, chatosi, does he say, Lashem, yes, chatosi Lashem, I've sinned before God. At best, chatosi Lashem can mean what? It can mean that he recognizes that he has sinned. Does he express the fact that he's embarrassed, that he is ashamed? Does he say, I will never do it again? From a technical point of view, David HaMelech simply has not fulfilled the mitzvah of confession. And what happens following that pause is that Natan already tells him, on the spot, you have been forgiven. Says the Rav the following. He says that there is an inherent dialectic, a contradiction in the whole idea of tshuva. The contradiction is the following, and he's talking about another one of the formulas of vidui. There is a vidui, remember, a confession that is said by the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. There is a vidui that is said by a Jew that brings a korban to the Beit HaMikdash. When he brings a sin offering, he has to say a vidui, and that vidui as well, it incorporates within itself all of the fundamental principles of vidui. The Rambam says the following: Ketzad Misvada. The Rambam is now talking about a person who has brought a sacrifice. How does he confess? Omei is supposed to say, Chatosi, Avisi, Poshati. Yes. Vasiti kach v'kach, I did such and such. V'chazarti b'tshuva lefanecha, I have done tshuva before you. V'zo kaparati, this carbon is my atonement. The Rambam says that zu kaparosi really represents the idea of prayer. Following... Thank you very much. Following one's doing tshuva, he's praying, let this be my atonement. Let this be the source of my forgiveness. Says the Rav the following. Tshuva is built on two pillars that are mutually, it would seem, exclusive. They are contradictory. Dimension number one of tshuva is expressed very beautifully by the Rav. He says, number one, it means hakaras hacheit, that one recognizes that he has sinned. What kind of a feeling overcomes man? There's a feeling of despair, of resignation. I am guilty. I admit that I've sinned. I confess my sin. I realize that I'm a sinner. I accept upon myself judgment. I have no excuse, I have no justification, there is no defense, there are no mitigating circumstances, I am unworthy of kindness or mercy. That's what chatasi means. I have sinned. And it incorporates all of those thoughts. It really means bringing a person to the point where there may very well be a sense of absolute despair and hopelessness. There is a famous Talmud Yerushalmi that says the following: Shalu lachochma, wisdom was asked, chote mahu oncho, what is the punishment for one who sins? Wisdom says, chatoyim teradef ra'a, those who are sinners are pursued by sin. A pasuk in Yechezkel. The sin itself pursues man. Don't we every so often read in the papers about a fellow who committed a crime some years ago, and one day he just walks into the local police station and he says, I'm the one that committed the crime. Because there's something inherent in sin that it pursues the sinner. It pursues him. The Gemara goes on to say that a prophecy was asked, what is the punishment for sin? And prophecy said, Hanefesh hachotat tamut. The sinner should die. It is only when the Gemara says, Shalul HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or they ask God, what should be the punishment for sin? And it is God who says, Yasa tshuva, let him do tshuva. Even Torah was not able to say tshuva. Torah said, let him bring a carbon, let him bring a sacrifice. It means, therefore, the only one who can say that if you have sinned before me, you can do tshuva is obviously only God himself. Otherwise, wisdom, prophecy, Torah would say that there has to be punishment. The full force of judgment and justice should be brought to bear upon the one who sins. Which means the first dimension of the emotional and intellectual makeup of the sinner should bring him to the very abyss of absolute despair. I admit it. I confess. I have sinned. I am worthy of any punishment that you are going to bring upon me. The feeling of hakaras hachet, recognizing that one has sinned, brings a person to feeling, in a sense, really broken completely from within, that he's worthless. He has lost all value as a human being. He has committed a terrible crime. Hakaras hachet, recognition of sin, really expresses the tragic part of man, because he sees that his life has come to a dead end. His entire existence is meaningless. As Shlomo HaMelech said, Havel Havolim Omar Kohelet. Kohelet said, it's all nothing. He feels that he simply has not succeeded in life. He's done terrible, terrible things. He's wasted his time, his energy, his effort, his intellect, his feelings, his mind, everything. It's all one waste. But that's only one dimension of tshuva. There is a flip side to tshuva. And that flip side to tshuva is precisely the opposite. Tshuva can be based only on the fact that one believes, first of all, with absolute certainty, he believes that there is a God, believes in God who is the creator of man, and that there is a spiritual dimension to man. And that man is capable of lifting himself from the very abyss and starting life all over again. There is a certain strength that a man is able to achieve, which is going to tell him that even though it seems as though all roads are closed, I'm the sinner, I confess, I deserve punishment, but someplace within his soul he feels there may be a little path. It's a very narrow path. It's a winding one. It goes up mountains and hills, and it comes down through valleys. It's going to make all sorts of sharp turns, but if I follow that little narrow path, I will ultimately be able to achieve atonement. And he doesn't give up. He doesn't despair. So the two sides of tshuva are on the one, hakaras hachet, which means absolute despair. Life was a waste. Terrible! I'm unworthy of God's mercy. On the other hand, he sees that there is a great God who accepts tshuva. He sees the tremendous potential in the soul of man. And he also believes that regardless of what he has done, someplace on that pile of ash that he's made of his life, there's still one little coal. A little coal that still has warmth and heat in it. And if he fans that little coal, he will rebuild the fire that will burn within him to bring him ultimately to tshuva. And it can happen. It can happen in a moment. There's a beautiful, beautiful Rambam. In chapter 7 of Hilchos Tshuva, the Rambam here has enunciated the idea. In Hilchos Tshuva, he says that man has free will. Free will. We are absolutely free. And the Rambam says, Hoel Rushut Kol Odom Netunalo, since man has free will and he can do whatever he wants, Yishtadel Odom Lasses Tshuva, man should try to do Tshuva. And then he goes on to say, Vayedame Odom Bal Tshuva, let not the person who is about Tshuva think to himself, Shehu Meruchok, he is so distant from the Tzaddikim because of the sins that he did, and therefore there's no way for him ever to regain the status that he once had. Let not the Bal Tshuva think that way. Ella, once he has done Tshuva, oh, the Nechmadu, he is beloved and he is desired before Habore, before the Creator Ki'ilu, who lochot as though he didn't sin. And then there's a very poetic description where the Rambam says, great is Tshuva, that it brings man close to the Divine Presence. And how great, the Rambam says, how great is Tshuva Emesh, just last night. This man was separated from the God of Israel. And he was despised and rejected, cast out. And now, all of a sudden, everything has changed. He's done tshuva. Now he's close. He is near. There is a warm relationship. He is beloved. He is beloved. So the Rav goes on to say the following. After tshuva comes prayer. The prayer that, God, please forgive me. Ono Hashem, please God, kaperna, forgive, lachatoyim, valaposhim, vilaposhim. That's what the Kohen Gadol says. There's a long tefillah that the Kohen Gadol says, on Yom Kippur, forgive the sinners of all of their sins, atone, slicha, mechila. But what does the person who brings a carbon, the person who brings a carbon after he expresses his regret on the past, he simply says, Vezohi kaparasi, this is my atonement. This. Where is the prayer of this Bal Tshuva? Why doesn't he have to say, On Hashem, please God, forgive me for all of the terrible things that I've done. And the Rav wants to know, where did the Rambam get this idea that Zu kaparasi, this is my atonement, alone is sufficient? So he says, what happens over here is the following. He says, from the words of David HaMelech said, no more than Chotasi. And then comes the pause. He quotes, the Rav quotes the Vilna Gaon, who says the following, Acharei HaMilah Chatati, after the word Chotasi, I sinned. The David HaMelech says, there is a pause in the pasuk. You know what the pause expresses? That David wanted to say everything else. What he wanted to do now was to say, I'm sorry on the past, I accept upon myself in the future never to do it again. God, please forgive me, I beg of you, find atonement, find a place, some place on the face of this earth where I can again be close to you. But Natan HaNavi is looking at David. David remains silent because he has become that broken by his tshuva, that everything that he wants to say, he is no longer capable of expressing it. If ever there was a pause that was pregnant with meaning, it is this pause. And as Natan HaNavi looks at him, he knows everything that's going on in David HaMelech's mind. He wants to get out all of the words, but he can't get out all of the words. And before God, it is as though all of those words were said. God knows precisely what's going on in the mind of David. The purpose of the pause is to tell us, yes, David did indeed intend to fulfill the mitzvah fully as it is stated in the Rambam. He wanted to express his regret for the past. He wanted to accept upon himself for the future never to do anything of the sort again. He wanted to pray before God that God should give him atonement and forgiveness. But the words couldn't come out. He was overcome with such remorse, but he knows that he's standing before God. That pause, do you understand how meaningful that pause is? That pause represents the fact that David HaMelech wanted indeed to fulfill the mitzvah of vidui properly as it should be, but he couldn't. But Natan HaNavi knows, and God knows, and therefore he turns to him and he says, God has forgiven you. In that pause, the two dimensions of tshuva, the sense of absolute despair and that one is completely dependent upon God, but also the sense that man does have the ability to pick himself up from the very abyss and rebuild his life completely all over again. Yes? Question that is asked, if God forgave him, why does he have to suffer? We've pointed out that from chapter 13, which we're going to begin in a moment, because in chapter 13, one of the great elements of tshuva appears in chapter 13, and we're going to need chapter 13 in order to understand it fully. A terrible story that we're going to study in chapter 13. The Rambam, the question is, if he's done tshuva and he's forgiven, why are there going to be seven chapters now that are going to describe the suffering that is going to befall David, the terrible punishment? Because the Rambam had said earlier in the first chapter of Hilchos Tshuva that there are certain sins that a person does and he turns to God and God forgives immediately. There are other sins where there is no immediate atonement. One has to wait for Yom Kippur in order for atonement to come. There are other sins where it's not Yom Kippur alone. Yom Kippur alone is not enough. But one has to do tshuva, Yom Kippur has to come, and there also has to be punishment afterwards. And one of those is Chilul Hashem, where there's a desecration of God's name. Then there must be punishment. And the punishment ultimately is the completion and the fulfillment of the process of atonement. There is no such thing that for every sin one is simply forgiven. And the Rambam enunciates it very clearly. For example, in the event that one has not fulfilled a positive commandment. Somebody should have eaten in the sukkah and didn't eat in the sukkah. Somebody should have heard shofar and didn't hear shofar. Somebody should have put on tefillin on a particular day and didn't put on tefillin. One who has not fulfilled a positive commandment, then all you have to do is stand up before God and say, God, I'm sorry, and there is complete forgiveness. If somebody did something that was wrong, in other words, transgressed a negative commandment, then you have to wait for Yom Kippur for forgiveness. If it is a negative commandment wherein there was also chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name, then there has to be suffering. Yes?
Could you say that the punishment for sin?
No, I didn't say that. No. I had quoted the Medrash, the Gemara, a Talmud Yerushalmi that says, wisdom said that sin pursues the sinner. It was prophecy that said that a sinner must die. But Torah said that a sinner can bring a sacrifice, and God said, let him do tshuva. God, obviously, is the final decider. Not wisdom and not prophecy. Yes, you finished?
I noticed something that doesn't happen because of sin. Because of sin.
It is the tikkun, yes. It is the tikkun, yes.
So, how do you gauge chilul Hashem? Isn't anything that you do against Hashem's world's wishes, whether it's
there's a great deal of discussion in public, something that's done in public, something that people know about, already begins to have the elements of chilul Hashem, desecration of God's name. Something that is done in private does not have chilul Hashem. For a Melech Yisrael, what he did, even though it wasn't private, but it was something that became known. And by virtue of the fact that it became known, it was a chilul Hashem. Let's read chapter 12. Yes, Sarah?
David gave him those sentences. When Nathan brought it in front of him, and he gave him
his own staff.
But Hashem himself was not so physical with David. Now, you can say, if Hashem says something, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like Moshe says, Necheni Ne Hashem.
Necheni Ne Misifra HaShem Katafa.
And other discussions, well, they brought about certain judgments upon themselves by saying something.
I don't believe that's so. Look at what's going to come upon him. I can't believe that David brought it on himself. Yeah, all right. Yes. That obviously doesn't happen.
That's not why God did it.
God has his own cheshbon. God doesn't take man's cheshbon. Yes.
I think we have to recognize that God, he sinned against God, but essentially he sinned against man.
Absolutely.
And, illustrations that you gave about not looking at the shelter and not putting on
purely against God.
So when man sins against man, then he deserves punishment.
Absolutely.
Even though God said you will not die.
But punishment, yes, absolutely. And that's what's going to happen. That's what we're going to start. Punishment number one comes right over here in chapter 13, by Yehi Acharei Chen, and it came to pass afterwards. Now you see, when it says by Yehi Acharei Chen, it's really saying that this is related to what came before. If it's totally unrelated, it didn't have to say by Yehi Acharei Chen and came to pass afterwards. Came to pass afterwards, Ul Avshalom ben David Achot Yafa. Avshalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister, Ushma Tamar, and her name was Tamar. Vayeh Ehoveha Amnon ben David. Amnon, the son of David, loved Tamar. There are, of course, questions in halacha, was she in any way related to him? No, she wasn't really related to him. She was the daughter of one of the wives of Shaul, of David, but her mother had become pregnant with her before David married her. And she was the one who later, had a, she had a son of Shalom then, who was born, who David was his real father. So we have Avshalom. God, so I'm getting a, you're going to see it right away. Wait, it's coming in the parent. Wait, hang in. Amnon is the firstborn of David. His mother is Achinoam ha-Yisraelit. Achina from Yisrael. Watch. We're going to have everything is going to be brought here in the parasha. Vayetzel Amnon lehitchal. Achinoam ha-Yisraelit from Jezreel. By the way, Amnon's mother was Achinoam ha-Yisraelit. By the way, did anybody listen to the news today and make any relationship between the news today and Tanakh? Not the kidnapping, no, the kidnapping, yeah.
The weather?
The weather, not the wedding, and not the kidnapping. I was thrilled when I heard the weather this morning. Near a place called Haroshet, Nahal Kishon overflowed. When we learned the Haftorah of Parshat Peshalach, Dvorah and Sisra, the battle of Barak ben Avinoam by Har HaGilboa in Emek Yisrael against Sisra and his 900 chariots. So I told you the pshat that said, in the words of Shiraz Dvorah, the song of Dvorah, Nahal Kishon Gerafam, the river of Kishon wiped them away. Where did he come from, by the way? Where did Sisera come from a place called Haroshet HaGoyim Amzi? And we said that what really happened that day in the battle was there was a sudden flood. Nahal Kishon went over its banks and it swept away Sisera and his 900 chariots. And we also pointed out that in 1797, when Napoleon fought the Arabs in Emek, in the Jezreel Valley, the same thing happened. The Arab forces were caught by the overflowing of the Kishon. The Kishon near Haroshet HaGoyim overflowed yesterday. So you see, if you learn Tanakh, you should be able to get a Tanakh from the weather report. It should be able to inspire you. That's precisely, we explained so many psukim in the battle of Barak against Sisera, and to truly understand the song of Deborah, you have to know that fact. Which means therefore somebody else who was present there could have said, my, what a coincidence. Just as Sisera and his 900 chariots are riding, you know, harmlessly by, there goes the Nahal Kishon. I'll tell you the truth, you can drive through Emek Yisrael 1,000 times and not even know where Nahal Kishon is. Do you know what a Nahal in Eretz Yisrael is like? What do you think it is? It's the Mississippi, the mighty Mississippi. What do you think this is? It's a little putrid little stream. But during the rainy season, the putrid little stream overflows and it becomes a mass of water. Gushes, right? I've never seen the Kishon. The truth is, one needs a magnifying glass during the summer to see the Yarden. Unless, of course, you go all the way up north and you get into the Abu Vim. You ever gone on the Abu Vim? Yeah, but you never got into the Yarden on an inner tube? Right. Then you all of a sudden begin to see that the Yarden is something. It's something. What? Like the lake in Prospect Park. I mean, what do you think? It's what's issuing the mighty Yarden? What is it? But during the rainy season now, we see precisely what can happen. And that's what happened on that day. So you see, you learn Tanakh, and you listen to the news. So it's not the kidnapping and not the hasana, but the weather report that tells it shut.
Because the canaries were so high, they had to open the gates, they shouldn't overflow.
Yes, what it really means is that while there may be some Jews who reject Eretz Yisrael, God doesn't. He loves Eretz Yisrael, and he's pouring down his blessing upon us. Gishmei bracha. Yeah. Then these guys will go ahead and give, I don't know, 50 billion cubic something or other to Jordan or to Syria, who knows. All right, listen, no politics, I got to learn this perek. It's a frightening, frightening perek. Vayetzel Amnon lehitchalot. Amnon was so oppressed by his love, lust, passion for Tamar that he began to... He was sick. He was absolutely lovesick. Bavur Tamar, achoto, because of his sister Tamar, ki betulahi. Now the ki betulahi doesn't mean because she is a virgin. That's not really what it means. It was her beauty. It was her beauty. The ki betulahi really explains the next part of the pasuk. Because she was betula, she was extremely sanua. Very modest. And there was something about her whole personality that sort of was so delicate and so fine. Sort of the kind of woman that one would, it would never occur to anybody, you know, sort of to do something to her would be sort of a repulsive, a desecration, yes, of an edla neshama. Because she was betula, therefore, vayipole be'enei Amnon la'asot lo ma'uma. Vayipole over here means either it would have been too unacceptable for Amnon to do something to her. So you see, it's very important to know how to read a pasuk. One could have read the pasuk as saying, he loves her because she's a virgin. Nah. The pasuk already before told us he is enraptured by her absolute beauty. But because she's betula, so there's something so delicate and so fine and so modest and humble about her that it's not the kind of woman that one would do violence to that serene beauty. Ulamon Rea, Amnon had a friend. Ushmo Yonadav ben Shima Achi David. Shima was the brother of David. This is Yonadav. So this is a first cousin of Amnon's. The Yonadav Ish Chachamaot. Yonadav, very, very wise man. What's fascinating over here, of course, is he's going to use his wisdom in a wicked, wicked way. In other words, one can be wise and wicked. The two may very well go together. Vayomalo, he said to him, Madua tokocho dal ben amelech. You prince, son of the king, why are you so dull? He's thin. He's geveiked. He looks like a shmata. I mean, and he's a ben hamelech. We're talking about a prince. A prince should be one who looks. And not only is a prince, he's the firstborn. For all intents and purposes, he is the pretender to the throne, the crown prince. Crown prince is the one who should look regal and royal, but he doesn't look regal and royal at all. Madua tokocho dal ben hamelech. Baboka baboka every morning. What he means is that in the morning, we're not talking about the moment that one wakes up, but in the morning one should be full of energy. But he's not sleeping nights. He tosses and turns because of his feelings for his sister. Hello, Tagidli, tell me. Vayamalo Amnon said to him, Etomar Achot Avshalom Achi. Aniohev. Watch this passage. See what he's saying. And because this is going to be extremely important. At Tamar, who is the sister of my brother Absalom, I love. Does he say his sister? No. So you have to read the pasuk carefully, because halachically she is not his sister. A stepsister to one, not even a half sister. She. Well, right. Very good question. Excellent question. Excellent question. Very good. I'm telling you, I'm thrilled with you. You're asking a good question. Watch.
No.
That's why you hear the pasuk. The pasuk says, "A Tamar who is the sister of my brother Absalom. The only one in this, the only one here who's related to me is Absalom. She's not. She is related to Absalom, but she's not related to me." And so Yonadav told him, "Shchava mishkavcha, lie in your bed, vehitchal, and make believe like you're really sick. And I was sick to the point that you can't go out. Ubo avicha lirotecha, and your father will come to see you, to visit you. V'amarta elav, so you should say to him, tavo no no tamar achoti v'tavreni lechem. Let my sister Tamar come, v'tavreni lechem. He calls her sister because in a sense they're all growing up in the same house. But her legal status was already to come and nurse, yes. V'tavreni lechem. Tavreni lechem, we had that word, it's one of the few places in Tanakh, and we had just had it before. When David is fasting for the child that is ill, in the last chapter, it says, Lo voro lechem, he would not eat anything. And we said that's where the term sudat havra'ah comes from. The suda that a mourner eats when they return from the funeral, this is the sudas havra'ah. It is the suda that is supposed to add a sense of bri'ut, the beginning of the process of healing. It's with the beginning of avelut, that is after the...
burial.
After the burial, that's when the havra'ah. The process only begins then. And the process begins by a meal that's brought in by neighbors. In a sense, while the mourner will not go out to the world out there, but the world out there is going to come in to the mourner. And it begins with the Suda Havra'ah, yes? That's a Sudat Hodayah. That's a Sudat Thanksgiving.
Great.
And here it's the Sudat Havra'ah. The outside world begins to come in. It's only at the end of Shiva that reluctantly the mourner is going to take the first step out of the house. That's why at the end of the period of mourning, on the seventh day in the morning, after davening, mourners put on their shoe, they walk out into the street to the corner and back. These are the first reluctant steps, hesitant steps, of beginning to rejoin the mankind in a sense, because death is a shock, it's a trauma to the system. One, in a sense, begins to withdraw, and it's after the Shiva that one begins to return.
How
so,
the word
I don't know how it's said in English. Well, how do they say it in English? I know it as the Sudat Havra, huh? No. It comes from the word b'riyut, to give one a certain degree of strength. Now he says, now watch the word has another meaning, because it says, "V'astalef einai, let her make before my eyes et habirya." The birya is a, she's going to make some latkes. Watch, she's going
to,
huh?
No,
no, birya.
You're supposed to give him food.
But that's not over here. Let her make for me the birya leman asher ereh, in order that I should see v'achalti miyada, and I will eat from miyada doesn't mean from her hand, but from that which she makes. Now, the Mefarshim bring that there are certain places where food is prepared in the presence of the one who eats. Huh? No, not Alayesh. We want, you know, you ever been in a Japanese restaurant?
Yeah.
Yes, right on the table in front of you, they have a tapanaki. Somebody once took us, 10 years ago? And they cut everything up in front of you and they make it. Because it seems that in certain cultures, for somebody who has difficulty eating, watching the food being prepared in one's presence is supposed to give one an appetite.
I told you that. When my children were small, they had a specific supper time, and I would start preparing supper an hour before, and the kids would come running into the kitchen dying of hunger. They only wanted to eat when I was starting to prepare. So I pushed their supper time a little back, and I said, all right, we'll eat half an hour earlier. So I had to start preparations half an hour earlier, and every time I started half an hour
they still came in. In other words, if you would have started supper at breakfast time, they would have been there then, too.
Exactly. It's the preparation of the food that gives you
appetite. Yeah. So that's what... This is the advice that Yonadav is giving. Amnon, ask that Tamar come and prepare the food for you. Yes? Oh, no. Boy, you're noticing too much. I didn't even notice that. I don't have my glasses on too well today. I'll worry about that. I'll give you an answer next week. Weiter. Let's get very good. Vayishkav Amnon, that's exactly what he did. Amnon stayed in bed, vayitchol, and he made believe that he is sick. Vayovo HaMelech Lirotho, the king came to see him. Vayomer Amnon al HaMelech, Amnon said to the king, Tavona Tamar Achoti, let my sister Tamar come, Utlabev le'enai shtei levivot. She should make two latkes. Levivot al latkes. She should melabev the two levivot. There is, of course, the word lave, over here, there is something very hearty about it, and his heart is involved in it. Ve'evre miyada, and I will eat the suda from her hand. Vayishlach David el Tamar abaytolem, but David didn't occur to David that there is any plot on the way over here. Vayishlach David el Tamar abaytolem, but David sent a message to Tamar, Lechina beit Amnon, achich, go to the house of your brother Amnon, vasilo habirya, and make for him this latke. Vatelech Tamar beit Amnon achia, v'hu shochev. Tamar went to the house of her brother Amnon, and he's lying in bed. Vatikach et habatzek, she took the dough, vatolosh, and she kneaded it, and this is all in his presence. Vatelabev le'enav, before his eyes, she made the latkes. Vatevashel et halavivot. It seems first it was cooked, and then, and the first one really say the cooking over here means frying. She fries them. Manish latkes. Vatikach et hamasreit vatitzok lefanav. She took something, you know, sort of, you have to pour out the batter, and she cooked it, and then everything she did in his presence, vayimoein le'echol, and he refused to eat. Vayomer Amnon, and Amnon said, hotziu kol ish me'olai, remove everybody from before me. Vayetzu kol ish me'olav, everybody left the room. Vayomer Amnon al Tamar, Amnon said to Tamar, havi habirya hacheded, bring the latkes into the room. Ve'evre miyadech, and I will eat it from your hand. Vatikach Tamar et halavivot asher asata. Tamar obviously is completely innocent over here. She doesn't occur to her. Unsuspecting. Tamar took the levivot that she had made, vatovei la'amnon ochiyah hachodra, and she brought it to her brother Amnon in the room. Vatagash elav le'echol, and she presented it to him so that he should eat. He held on to her and he said to her, Boi shifri imi achati, lie with me, my sister. But Tomala, listen to how she responds. Al ochi, no, my brother. And remember, al, we had once said a shir many years ago, I don't remember. There's a very, very beautiful Meshech Chochma in Pashat Beshalach where he differentiates between two words that mean no. One is al and the other is lo. Right? And same two letters, but they're two different words. Al always means please don't. Lo is, as we would say in Yiddish, lo yimetan aleph. It's an absolute statement. Al always means please. There is something pleading in the word al. Al achi, please know, my brother. Al ta'aneni, do not torture me. Ki lo yeyosechim b'Yisrael. Something of this sort is not done in Israel. You can't do this. Al ta'aseh ta'nevalazot. Don't do this terrible, this terribly ugly, ugly thing. Now she has used the word al three times over here in the pasuk. Three times she says, please, please don't. Please don't. Don't do this terrible thing. You know where else we find words like this? Nevola, when Shem rapes Dinah. But there are going to be differences between that story and this story. And I think we're going to have a difficult time understanding the difference, but watch. But no, we'll understand it. Watch. Vani, ono olichet charpati, where will I ever be able to take my shame? I won't be able to go anyplace. I'm going to be shamed and embarrassed. This is an act of violence. Va'atotie ka'achad ha'navalim v'Yisrael, you're going to be considered in Israel ka'achad ha'navalim. How do you translate a novel? A novel is a lowlife. A nidetrechtige brie. There's something in Yiddish that cannot be translated into any other language. You're going to be an absolute a knave. I think, is that what the English says? Ki lo yimna ani mimeka. He will not withhold me from you. They could, yes, they could marry. They could marry. Velo ovo lishmoa bekola. He didn't want to listen to her. Vayechezak mimena, he was stronger than her. Vayaaneha, and he tortured her. Vayishkavota, and he slept with her. He lived with her. He raped her. But she raped her. Huh? No, as long as you said Vayaaneha before, that already is a description. a description of what he...
He overpowered.
We're talking about an act of rape. We're talking about an Avala being soiled. We're talking about a terrible, terrible thing. The powerful pasuk, and most probably more powerful than any other pasuk, is the next pasuk. Vayisna eha Amnon sina gedola va'oz. Amnon hated her. He despised her now. A great hatred. Ki gedola, the pasuk is so powerful. Ki gedola hasina asher sineya me ahava asher aheva. His hatred that he hates her now is greater than the love that he loved her before. Vayomalah Amnon. Amnon said to her, Kumi, get up. Lehi, get out. Vatomelo. Watch. Wait a minute. Wait, you want... First, what I want to go into your kishkis is the power of the pasuk, what the pasuk is describing. Something has snapped in Amnon. Something has happened. And we're going to have to explain what happened. We're going to have to understand. Now we're going to have to understand what happened over here. This is a pasuk where there's such profound and powerful psychology. What's happening to it? The Rav does a tremendous... Yeah, but you know what's happening? You're right. Guilt. Who does he really hate?
Himself.
Yeah. He's only transferring it to her. The truth is that he is shocked with what he did. He's torn apart with anger, remorse, yes, guilt for what he's done. But he's not at the stage yet where he can look himself in the face and say, I did a terrible thing, I'm sorry. He transfers it all. She becomes the object of his hatred. Of whom does he hate? He hates himself. Despises himself. He can't live with himself. Watch. The descriptive power of a pasuk. Vatomelo, she said to him, Al odot hara'ah gedola hazot. Over here the word al really means about. About the terrible, this terrible evil. Me acheret asher osita imi l'shalcheini. What you're doing now is even worse than what you did before. You're throwing me out, you're casting me out. This is even worse. Exactly. Batidbat nefesh Shem. Why? Shem, after he rapes Dina, he loves her even more. Batidbat? Batidbat nafsho b'dina. Do you know what batidbat? Vayehavat anara. Do you know what batidbat? Exact opposite. When you use the word batidbat, Alkain, Yazov Ish, Es Oveves Imo, V'Dovak B'Ishto. Do you know what Dovak means? To become one. And he loves her. And by Yedavir Alev Hanara. I haven't seen anybody that asked the question, but I'm leaving this question with you. What do you think?
About what?
About what? I mean, I'm not asking a question about why there's an extra vav. I'm asking a question, why do two people respond so differently? We're talking about the precise opposite. One hates her more than he ever loved her. And,
He raped her.
Bella!
He raped the woman. The other one was in the field, and this one is...
Bella, let me ask you something. What happens if Tamar would have called up the your hotline?
Yeah. He would have said, call the police immediately.
Yeah, what would you have done? Your hotline would have told her, well, listen, it's your brother. I mean, what are you getting so upset about?
But he maybe felt ashamed. Why? Because he was a kingly son then.
He did. So was that his family. So was it.
Unless, of course, yes.
He did it.
Different culture, keep going. Yes. Different culture.
They were used to doing this.
Oh, that's right. Amnon knows that he did a terrible thing. Shem doesn't see that he did a terrible thing. He doesn't live with guilt. He doesn't live with guilt. He doesn't hate himself. He doesn't hate... Because he's living in a culture where...
Taking
a woman and living. Whether it was a part of the course. On the contrary, he's not overcome with a sense of remorse, a sense of guilt.
I think for him, with Dina, it was an accomplishment.
That's also true. The idea that a daughter of Yaakov... But it says he loves her. It says that he loved her by Yedaber Alev Anaro. He speaks to her heart. You know.
It says Dina Bat Yaakov.
Yes, it says.
Enhanced her.
Enhanced her. But the fact that he raped her made absolute, did not change his whole relationship.
Man, he's really very mad. Yeah. Shechem really loved him. But this was just love.
No. I'm not ready to accept that. Because the first pasuk in the chapter, says, Vayehoveha Amnon ben David. He really loved her, but yes, he really loved her. It's just that the love, because the love turned to lust. The love turned to lust, and then to hate. Yes, he started off loving her, but that can happen. Love turned to lust can, I mean, yeah, that's...
But it's still very puzzling.
Well,
if he loved her, which it says in the first part, why didn't he think to marry her?
Yeah,
it's
that the king would allow it. Why didn't he
get advice? He got advice, and isn't that what all sin is? The Gemara says, "Ein adam chote, a person only sins if nichnas bo rosh shtus, did something. People do things that are stupid. I mean."
He only got this advice after his sleepless night. And why was he suffering so much when he could have asked to marry?
Go answer it. Just one more. Now you know what they're getting upset about in the Mizanon of the Knesset?
I think we should really need to forget that.
Dina,
we should be comparing this to David Hamela.
Wait a minute.
Because here, he loved her, he did something wrong, and now what is he doing in response to what he did wrong? He's blaming her for what he did wrong.
That's for sure. You're absolutely right. David was able to say Chatasi. Of course. David was able to say Chatasi. He's incapable of saying Chatasi. I mean, of course, the similarity is that we're talking about this is punishment for David. You're going to see what's going to happen with David over here.
It's like Adam said about
Chava Ha'isha. Yash, Ha'isha Ashe Natato Imadi, he knows, she gave. No, wait. When men blame women?
They get into trouble.
Right.
I agree.
Oh, gosh. What were you saying?
My question is that if he loves her, they're saying he got that advice and he got a jukbarosh, etc. But before all this came about, he was having sleepless nights and he was sick with love. Why, at that point, before he got the advice, did he not seek to marry her?
Because I
think
it wasn't ready for
marriage.
I
don't know,
it is.
So you're asking Akasha, you know, you're asking Akasha on a Maisa.
Yeah.
Asking so Akasha on a Maisa.
Might very well be an indication of fault in his character.
Yeah. He was a weak person.
I don't know. Okay. You know what I'm ready to tell you? I'm ready to say something. Wow. You know what I was just going to say? No. He's referred to as Ben HaMelech. There is something about a prince who feels that he can get whatever it is that he wants. He can get what he wants. But you see, there on the country, because it says that David had never rebuked Adoni Yahu ben Chagid, so I would assume that...
He had that same personality in England with Charles
III. Let me just read another few psukim, and we will talk more. We will talk more about the psychology of what has happened over. It's a terrible. Talking about a terrible. Well, listen to these psukim. Just let these psukim go into your neshama. By Yikra es Naro Misharso, he called to pasuk 17. He called his servant, his boy, the servant, by Yomer, and he said, listen to this pasuk. Shilchu na et zot, may Allah. Send this away from me. He cannot even utter her name anymore. She has become, the fact is, he turned her into an object. And now what she has become is an object of absolute disgust. Shilchu na et zot, may Allah. Send it, this, away. Hafutza out, una'ol hadelet achareha, and lock the door after her. Va'oleha k'tonet pasim, and she was wearing a k'tonet pasim. Well, Yosef? Over a coat of many colors, it seems that this was sort of the uniform that was by princesses or those who lived in the palace. Jichen tilbashna benot hamelech habetulot mi'ilim. These were the kind of coats and cloaks that were worn by the daughters of the king. Vayotze otam mishorto hachutz. His servant ushered her, heaved her out, v'no'al hadelet achadah, and he locked the door behind her. V'tikach tomar efer arosha, and Tomar put ash on her head. V'ktonet hapasim asher oleho kara, and the ktonet pasim that was upon her, she tore her garment. V'tosim yoda arosha, she put her hands on her head. V'telech halov v'zarka, and she went out into the hall, into the palace, crying out the cry of terrible agony. It's amazing how with such few words, just a few psukim, there's such a story, and all of the pain and the power and the agony of the story is expressed in such few words. That's the beauty and the sanctity of Tanakh. A word like Zot, Kumi Lechi, get out. There's something so powerful about it. Vayomer Eileh Avshalom Achiha, her brother Avshalom said to her, Ha Aminon, don't ask me why Aminon is spelled this way yet. Give me a week. Ha Aminon, I couldn't sleep all night. I was worried about the snow, you know. Ha Aminon Achicha Haya Imach. Now watch. Was your brother Amnon with you? He already suspected. He suspected that something had gone wrong. Va'ato ha'chosi, now my sister, ha'charishi, remain silent, ha'chichu, he is your brother. Al tishiti et libech la'davar hazeh, don't pay attention to the whole thing. Forget it. Va'teshiv Tamar v'shomema, beit Avshalom achia. Tamar stayed shomema. I think most probably if you, all the studies about how victims of rape, how they feel, there was something, shomema means desolate, like there is no, more than that, the whole mind is desolate, one cannot concentrate, there's no ability to think, there's a behala, a sense of like an emptiness overcomes it. What did you say, spaced out, something? Yeah, it's something like that, shomema. Incidentally, where else is the word used in this context? Roni akora, Lo Yolodo, when the Navi Yishayahu talks about Yerushalayim, Ki Rabin B'nei Be'ula Mi B'nei Shomema, Yerushalayim is desolate, alone, no children, but ultimately, and it's an Echa also, ultimately she is going to have more children. Beit Avshalom Achia, disoriented, excellent word. Ba'melech David Shomayet Kol Advarim Ha'ele, Vayichal lo ma'od, and King David heard all of these things. Vayichal lo ma'od. I believe that that's extremely important. Anybody who's been coming here for the last few years should know exactly what I'm going to say on Vayichal lo ma'od. Very good. Well, how long have you been coming to class? Not long enough. It must have been a year ago. I said that there's a difference between Vayichal lo or Vayichar Af. Vayichar Af means that one is angry and the anger is directed outward. As the classic example, to me, what was the classic example? When Dosan Vaviram, those are the two bad guys, right? When Dosan Vaviram say to Moshe in Pasha Korach, Dosan Vaviram say, you took us out of a land, Zavat Kol of Edvash. You took us out of a land, you understand? You didn't bring us to a land flowing with milk and honey. You took us out of a land flowing with milk and honey. So it says, Mitzrayim, they refer to Mitzrayim as a land flowing with milk and honey. So it says, Vayichal l'Moshe Ma'od. Vayichal l'Moshe Ma'od. And Rashi says, Nitzta'er Moshe ad l'Ma'od. Moshe was very, very full of pain. So that means the word Vayichar can have two meanings. One is anger, and the other is pain. When it's directed outwards, then it's anger. When it is inward, it's pain. When it says Vayichar leMoshe Ma'od, Moshe was full of pain. Here, the great phrase, the great description, Zavas Chalav Edvash, is used by God to describe the promised land. And Datan Aviram had the gall, the chutzpah, the arrogance, the rishus to call Mitzrayim, the Beis Avodim, to call that the land of Zoras Chalav Devash. Moshe was so pained from within. Vayichar lo ma'od, David blames himself. Why didn't he see? Maybe if he would have been spending more time with his children, he sees himself as guilty.
He
set it all up, and he didn't know that he was set up. He didn't realize at the time that he was being used. He feels himself guilty. He's very pained. How did I let this happen? Avshalom did not speak with Amnon, not a word passed between them. This is also an extremely significant pasuk, but of course we'll do it all next week. Ki sonei Avshalom et Amnon, because Avshalom hated Amnon, al dvar asher ino et tamar achoto, because he had violated, tortured, and this tragedy, of course, because he doesn't speak to him. Because Avshalom doesn't speak to him, we're going to see how the tragedy is going to unfold.
Why did he tell her that she shouldn't say anything?
The lack of communication. Wait a minute, you're the communication expert, right? Because there's no communication. Because, more than that, he has cut off all communication. Therefore, all that's going to happen is all of these feelings are going to fester. And they're going to become stronger. They will never be resolved. They're never going to be talked out. Nobody, if Avshalom would have gone to him and yelled at him, and Amnon would have said, good, terrific, you're into the parak. It's such a painful, powerful, moving parak to be continued next week. Okay.